Thanks for having me here today. I've only actually sat in the Sangha once, so I may know a few of you individually, but I actually don't know you very well, and you probably don't know me very well. And so holding that, I was struggling, you know, what should I talk about? And what would be meaningful for me as well as appropriate for a community that I'm not that familiar with. And so I thought the topic that I would weave around is intention, and build it from that, because we're taught that intention is actually precedes every action, but also every mind moment that we have. So it's really this initiating point that we have. And so I have some, you know, personal thoughts around intention, but I also went into it as a subject just to explore it more. And I was surprised that, I don't know if other people know this, but in terms of our language, it's so interesting to me. But it comes, the word intend or intention comes from the same root as tennis. And so, I mean, just why is that? And really, the root is to stretch. Sort of stretching with some intensity, some will, some effort. And in terms of other associated meanings, the Latin and the French entendre is also to hold, to hear something. So it's about stretching and holding. So I just wanted to do this experiment, and it may resonate with you or not, but when we talk about stretching and holding, the thing that comes to my mind around my practice is yoga. So what I'm going to do in the next few moments is just guide you through a stretch, and it can be a stretch of your choice. If you have some limitations around your body, you can even just use your hand. And as I guide you through the stretch and release, what I'm interested in is for you to look at the energy that is left behind. Not so much the outcome in terms of, you know, the physical result of the relaxation or the what happens to your muscles. That's important. But I'd like you to notice what you can about the energy that the stretch and the hold leaves behind. So just going inward a little bit and getting in touch with where your body is. And just choosing a very simple stretch. It could be just your arms going up or to the side, just being careful of your neighboring sitters. Or it could just, as I said, be in your hand or even just in your spine. So getting in touch with your breath. And on the next inhale, just stretch one portion of your body. Could be your arm towards the ceiling. Not going to an edge, but just stretching that section and holding it for an inhale and an exhale. And one more inhale and an exhale. And the last inhale. And as you exhale, just release that stretch. And with your eyes still closed, just going inward. And noticing if you can identify the energy that's there. Can you describe it? Is it more open or tight? Is it loose or rigid? And just coming back into the room. The exploration around an exercise like that I'm interested in, it's an experiment for me as well, is that we feel all sorts of things in our body. We feel our emotions, you know, we feel love, we feel anger, we feel sadness. We have those physical sensations in our body. Is there a way that we can feel our intentions as well? And that physical manifestation of intention may be much more subtle, because it's part of our practice to notice our intentions before each mind moment. And we take our lives so much for granted that that's the piece that I often, in my own life, skip. I'm in the action without noticing what the intention is. So, of course, I may also skip over the sensations in my body. So it's just a suggestion that number one, there may be a physical manifestation of our intentions. And that in my experience is that when I'm in touch with my highest intentions, that place that I'm actually stretching and holding, there's an ease. There's an openness for what my next moment will, how that enters into my life. That ease doesn't mean that the pain or the suffering has necessarily gone away. But there's an ease in which I approach, or how that pain and suffering approaches me. There's an ease in that interaction. The other thing that interests me about the word intend is that it has this association of going inside to tend myself. So it's a process of self-reflection. I can't really determine your intention. I can only really come to terms with what my own intention is. And many of you have heard, and I've heard this over and over again, that our karma, that our experience rests on this really sharp knife. It rests on the tip of intention. The Buddha said, "Intention, I tell you, is karma. Intending creates karma by way of body, speech, and mind." And in the Dhammapada, it's written, "Mind is the forerunner of all things. If you act based on kindness and wisdom in the mind, happiness will follow you, like the wheel of a chariot follows the ox which draws it. And if you act on unkindness, or if you act from an unwise state of mind, then unhappiness follows just as the wheel of the cart follows the ox which draws it." So traditionally, intention sows the seeds of either suffering or happiness. And there's this direct relationship between outcome and motivation. So I'm just going to go briefly over how intention is broken down traditionally in how I understand it within the Theravadin tradition. And it's broken down into three parts. The first part is around renunciation, around letting go. And we've you know, in our culture, we always talk about letting go without necessarily knowing how to let go. And so the way that that's been helpful for me is just to notice where I've already let go, where there already is a sense of ease, and when and where and with what have I already let go of in my life? Because that actually is what I want to cultivate. The hardness of not being able to let go of a difficult situation is actually not what I want to cultivate. And sometimes I'll beat myself up because I'm in that place of being stuck. So I try to sometimes shift my focus to where I have succeeded. One of the things that I think about when I get most frustrated around this aspect of letting go is I go back to my childhood and I remember the things that I've let go of. There are things that I was incredibly attached to. One of them was this is pre-Star Wars, but this toy called a Robot Commando. And this dates me, but this was something that was battery run and you dialed a certain command and it did whatever it was supposed to do, run around in circles or whatever. And I was completely attached to it for, you know, for 6 or 7 years. And at a certain point in time, I no longer needed it. I mean, when I think about it, there's still this sentimental feeling that I have, you know, when I think my parents still have it, actually. But I no longer need it. I mean, this is maybe a no-brainer that I've let that go. But what about it helped me to let it go? Because that actually is what I want to cultivate more of, with the more complex issues other than the, you know, the robot commandos in my life. And to notice when I am aware of these things, when I am not attached. And I say what I'm aware of because there are a lot of things that I'm attached to that I'm not aware of. So that's part of my practice, is revealing those things. But we can only change those things we're aware of. So that constant process of revealing is part of my own practice. It's the edge of my own practice. So letting go is the first component of this aspect of intention. The flip side is, of course, holding on to desire. I sat with Ujjanika, one of the Burmese Sayadaws in Vancouver, during the first year of when I met my partner, my current partner. And I went on a two-week retreat with Sayadaw Ujjanika. And I went, with hindsight, I went with these mixed intentions. I had this ideal of wanting to learn the Burmese practices and sort of deepen my own practice, but I also had this intention of the energy around this new relationship, the attachment, wanting to see where it went. And I had a horrible retreat because my energy was completely divided. It was in conflict, and I see that now. But those confused intentions really affected my experience deeply. And what one thing that I came out of that is really all desire for, this is how I understand it, all desire is really the desire for no desire. You know, I want to reach that place of satisfaction, of emotional satisfaction with my partner, or emotional satisfaction of in my practice, that contentment. That's the desire, that's the underlying desire of all my desires. And it's where the practice is helping me discern what is actually going to get me there. What's what they are calling more skillful versus not. The second piece of intention is the intention around goodwill versus ill will or anger or hatred. And goodwill is guided by metta or loving kindness. And really, I was, in my own experience, the most difficult place for me to intend to give metta or loving kindness is when I'm injured or when I'm hurt or when I'm in this difficult position. And I have this. This is a poem by Rumi, and it's about being in an intimate relationship, because we get hurt all the time in intimate relationships. And how are we still guided? Because we are, by loving kindness in those relationships. So this poem is called Relationship Booster. Here's a relationship booster that's guaranteed to work. Every time your spouse or lover says something stupid, make your eyes light up as if you heard something brilliant. I love that. That intention, just to let it, you know, be brilliant. The third piece around intention is harmlessness, creating harmlessness, as opposed to creating harm or transgressing that precept of killing. And harmlessness is guided by compassion. And compassion is about stretching and holding and embracing everything in our experience. You know, the pleasant, the unpleasant, the neutral, the things that we hate, the things that we love, about ourselves as well as about others. So being kind even when we are not kind. And the piece about compassion that is fascinating to me is when I recognize that I am not very compassionate, that is actually the beginning of compassion. That's the choice point. So it sounds contradictory, but it's the choice of what do I intend to do with that awareness that I'm not being very kind to my partner, to my parents, to my coworker. I also want to say that intention is often not very clear. It can be really confusing. And that's why I like this aspect of tending on the inside, you're going inside and being really self-reflective. I'm trained as a social worker. And I do a lot of mental health in public health settings. So I know this energy that we often direct our journey outwards to be good people by doing good things. And I hope I'm not being too radical by saying doing good deeds does not necessarily make us good people. Because the same deed, the same action, can have so many different kinds of internal intentions. And I'll give you an example that I struggle with almost on a daily basis because I live in San Francisco, and that is when someone comes up to me in the street and asks for money, what do I do? And supposing I give them some money, what is my intention? Can you tell? Is it really to be generous and practice dana? Is it just to get them out of my face? Is it because I'm walking with someone and I want to look good in front of them? The same action can have so many different internal experiences. And really, you can't determine that for me. I can be the only monitor of that experience. And so it's such a deep practice. The question they ask in Tribes in Zaire is, the teeth are smiling, but is the heart? Is our heart aligned with the actions that we're making in the world, even if they're great actions? I'll go back to a yoga practice. For those of you who have done any, you know, yoga practice, when you settle into a pose in a class, who's to say that you're on your edge or not? You know, are you looking good for the instructor or, you know, the person that you're attracted to across the room? Or are you having a bad day and you're just sort of skating by? You know, there's no way of even the instructor really knowing what your direct experience is. Only you are the judge of that. I co-lead a LGBT sitting group in San Francisco, and when we started last July, there was a man. We sort of introduced, we have this culture of introducing ourselves, and then in the beginning we just said, why are you coming to practice? Why are you interested in this group? And this one guy said, hi, my name is blah, 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 and I'm here to find a partner. And I love that, because he was so authentic. You know, it wasn't about being a good practitioner. It wasn't about learning about the Four Noble Truths. It was about finding a lover. And it probably was a better place to find a lover than a lot of places. So, you know, there was an alignment with how he was expressing himself and what his intentions were. And I really respected that. You know, I mentioned that it's impossible to determine someone else's intentions. And I think that sometimes gets us in trouble. There's a lot of suffering that's caused. Because we can have our deepest, most meaningful intentions and also still cause someone else pain. There's a story in this book about Ajahn Chah being Dharma. And one of the stories is about when he's challenged by a practitioner. And the reason I bring this up is that the conflict between our deepest intentions and sometimes causing pain for others happens even in our intention to practice. So this person is talking to Ajahn Chah and says, I'd like to tell you a story about some relatives of mine. This family had a son whom they recognized as having the potential of being a great student. So they made a lot of sacrifices to send him to college. And when he was in school, he began to take an interest in learning the Dharma and soon found a lot of joy in it. The parents had great hopes that he would get a good job and become a pillar of the family. Everybody had sacrificed for him. But by the time he graduated, he was immersed in the Dharma and wanted to ordain. His parents were upset to the point of tears and felt distressed about religion. But in the end, they had to agree and let him ordain. When I hear about this tale of this young man who let his parents down so badly, I see it as a sin, a terrible sin. He made bad karma with his parents so many others. It is a selfish action, following his own desire. So his intention to practice really hurt people. And so Ajahn's reply was, the intention in ordaining is not to destroy our parents or family lineage, but others might see it differently. Like the gold and the lead, one who decides to ordain for life sees the world as lead, just as you choose the gold. We don't want the world, our family, and the rest to be destroyed, but it is difficult to find people who can understand this. When people ordain with pure intention, they suffer too, because they see things according to the Dharma. If any of you have been in long-term practice a month or 2 months or 3 months and know the difficulties of separating from worldly obligations, it has that same feel that you're cutting off from your parents or your family or your partners. And it hurts. And yet there is a deeper intention beyond that. And how do we work with that? How do we work with the fact that our highest intentions can also create pain? Bruce mentioned in my intro that I do a lot of cultural work and diversity work, and I do some of that at Spirit Rock. And it is a prime place for this complex aspect of intention to arise, that the intention around cultural healing necessarily means that there's been injury in the past. And so when that pain comes up, it's often difficult to focus on the intention as opposed to the pain that's arising, because the pain itself can be quite distracting. And the fact that in many aspects, people have very different intentions. Around my work, some people see it as integrally tied to their Dharma practice, and some people don't see the connection at all. Some people, you know, come to practice in order to find refuge from worldly situations. I mean, we take the three refuges. And some people need to know how the Dharma is going to inform them in these worldly struggles. Different intentions, and how do we still work together around these complex issues? The next piece that I just wanted to talk about is sort of the bad press on intention, because they're in, I'm actually not sure where it came from, but I know that it was in the 1600s or 1700s when this aphorism came up that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And intentions are actually never meant to stand alone. And so it is not, intention by itself does not eliminate the suffering or the pain, as I said earlier. But it really serves as a guide And I go back to that opening exercise around stretching and holding. And what are you open to? What are you guided towards? We're taught that intention is the foundation of the path towards the end of suffering and the cultivation of happiness. We can't be happy unless we intend to be happy. That intention has to precede that mind moment. And I don't know about you, but have you ever met someone who, because of background or self-esteem issues, doesn't feel that they deserve to be happy? They don't deserve to feel that they should be treated well. And then express the question, well, why am I not happy? We have to want to and intend to be happy in order to be happy. So dismissing intentions is like trying to build this house without any foundations. At some point in time, it will weaken and structurally fall down. There's a saying among the Ashanti tribe, with the aid of a tree, the tree climber makes contact with the sky. And how I associate that is that our intention is like that tree. And with the support of our intention, we can aspire and dream and vision who we really see ourselves to be. And however high the sky is, we can actually begin to reach it. And it's a concentration practice. Those of you who are familiar with the Burmese, and I learned this, you know, on that awful retreat with Ujjanaka, the walking practice is not just about noticing the lift, the movement, the placement of your feet, but noticing the intention before each action. So noticing the intention to lift and the lift. Noticing the intention to move and the move. Cultivating that peace that sometimes we take for granted so often. And so again, as we cultivate that pattern of noticing what has been unnoticed, noticing not just when I have not lived up to my intentions, not just when I have disappointed myself or fallen off my pedestal. But when have I lived my life so that I am in alignment with my highest intentions? Because that's happened too. And that's actually what I want to cultivate more of, is when those moments that I am in alignment, we don't actually talk about how we inspire ourselves, but we do. It's why we're in practice. That energy of our direct experience inspiring us more to do more, even in our most difficult circumstances, even when we're going through either difficult emotions or situations. In spite of everything, I still feel that people are really good at heart. I simply can't build up my hopes on a foundation consisting of confusion, misery, and death. I see the world gradually being turned into a wilderness. I hear the ever-approaching thunder which will destroy us too. I can feel the suffering of millions, and yet if I look up into the heavens, I think it will come out all right. that this cruelty will end and that peace and tranquility will return again. In the meantime, I must uphold my ideals, for perhaps the time will come when I shall be able to carry them out. That was written in Anne Frank's diary. Cultivating intention even under the most impossible circumstances. Some of you, I'll end with this poem that Angelus Arian actually had introduced to the 1996 peace conference that the Dalai Lama was at, and you may have heard it. But I invite you to listen to it with this aspect of how it speaks to intention. It's called Anyway. It's been all over the internet, as most things. If you are kind, people may accuse you of having selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. When you spend years building, things can be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. People really need help, but they may attack you if you do help them. Help people anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. The good you do today, people will forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best that you have, and you may get kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is only between you and God. It never was between you and them anyway. So let's sit for a few moments. And as you reconnect with your breathing, just noticing the sensations in your body in this moment. Letting the words just fall away, the topics that we've talked about. Just noticing the energy that you're left with. And just noticing, has the energy shifted for you between now and before this morning? through our practice and deepening exploration of our highest and deepest intentions, may we find more and more paths towards the end of suffering and cultivating the paths towards freedom for ourselves, for our loved ones, and for all beings in all directions on this planet and in all worlds. Thank you for your attention.